are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brian Peacock, with you once again on this Thursday edition of the show. My guest today is Dylan DeSimone. I'm excited to talk to Dylan. Haven't talked to him since draft day when we did our live draft coverage, which a lot of you did watch, and I appreciate that. Had a lot of fun with him and Nick and Eric Crocker hanging out over down at the bar and watching the draft and talking ball with those guys. Always a good time. So we're going to get here with Dylan, talk 49ers, talk about what we're seeing at minicamp and talk a little bit more about the draft and how the team looks coming up in 2018 and beyond. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review the show, tell a friend. We're on iTunes, Spotify, and we got some great new content at LockedOn49ers.com. Chris Wilson, who's going to join me on the show pretty soon here, going position by position, doing 2018 49ers positional breakdowns at LockedOn49ers.com. And you can also find all of the podcast streaming and links to where to subscribe at LockedOn49ers.com. And if you would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. You can also email the show, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. And with that, let's bring on today's guest, Dylan DeSimone. Always very nice to talk to Dylan. I haven't talked Niners with you since, what, our Facebook Live coverage of the draft, right? Welcome to the podcast once again, Dylan.
Yeah, Brian, man. Thanks. Thank you for having me back. The draft show was actually a ton of fun. And really got to see like the whole initial reactions. And yeah, I mean, that was a blast. So I'm really, really glad to be back on here with you.
Yeah, that was a fun time. And anybody that wants to go back, it's still relevant. Kind of going back and seeing what we thought about the draft and seeing how the draft went down is really cool. So both of our Facebook pages, you can find that stuff. But looking at content here, 4thandnine.co is where you can find all of Dylan DeSimone's stuff. Is it, it's .com or .co? I thought I might have seen a .com recently.
So we're now a .com.
Okay.
That was a hang up for a little bit.
You had to earn that M, right?
Yeah. You know, well, when I first started, I kind of just wanted to put all my thoughts down on a blog, so I didn't really care what it was. But then, you know, the opportunity came to get the .com. So just for, yeah, everybody, so it's easier to find, easier to search. Yeah, we're now 4thandnine.com.
4thandnine.com. And the podcast. That's right. Welcome to the podcast game.
Thank you, man. Yeah, thank you. The Cover 4 podcast, yeah, we just wrapped our second episode. That's with me and my co-host, Eric Crocker. You guys know him as the DB specialist, and he's done all that great work for us at 4thandnine. But yeah, man, it's a totally different way to do content. I mean, I had done one once before, but I mean, I had, you know, it was very brief. I really just kind of enjoyed coming on as a guest, but yeah, it's a different universe.
It's totally different. And I would say the number one thing that is the most difficult is keeping up with it. And now I'm doing it daily, which is like, okay, like a serious business doing a podcast daily, because sometimes it's hard to do it once every 2 weeks, you know, let alone trying to do it daily. And so that's kind of a struggle, but also you get in the groove too. It's kind of like anything else. When you do it a lot, it becomes natural and it becomes second nature rather than like, okay, we got to get this going. Oh, you want to skip it today? Okay, we'll do it the next day. And it's like, oh, well, we'll do it next week. And so it's really easy to skimp on it. But when you're doing it daily, it's like, I'm doing a podcast today. I don't know what it's going to be about yet. It's going to be about something.
Yeah. And that's the best when you're actually at that point where you could just throw it together the day of.
Yeah. And like today, there's OTAs or mini camps and stuff to talk about. So it's like, cool, man. There's like, you know, a little bit of news and some nuggets out there. And we were just talking off the air about some of them that we're going to get into, which it's like fun at this point of the offseason. You're like a detective. You're like, okay, so-and-so lined up over here. All right. Now I see where they're going with this roster.
Yeah. No, there was a lot of that. One of the big takeaways for me early on, and, you know, we had kind of read about it, but it seemed consistent today. Kyle Shanahan was talking more about Reuben Foster playing will linebacker.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was the Mike linebacker last year. But they're talking about more about Fred Warner wearing the green dot and being, you know, the Mike linebacker while Reuben plays will. Shanahan was kind of talking about how he likes to just set him loose on the field. So that was one thing that kind of stood out to me. Is he going to be playing Mike or Will this season, or is it going to be interchangeable or what?
Yeah, I think that's a big thing actually, because Reuben was pretty awesome when he was playing next to Coyle last year. And you keep him clean, you know, keep him unblocked, Let him fly to the ball. Don't make him think too much. He doesn't have to shout out the plays. And I don't think he necessarily took to that right away last year. And Fred Warner is supposed to be a really heady guy and a smart player. So if he does well with that in long term, and especially because Kyle Shanahan's gotten out of his way to talk about how interchangeable those two positions are, you know, as far as physical attributes go and stuff like that. Well, then if Fred Warner is the guy who's better at barking out the play calls, then let him worry about that stuff. Man in the middle, keep Reuben Foster clean, coming off the weak side. They could both blitz a little bit from where they're at. They can both cover from where they're at. Let him go and let Reuben be that animal on the weak side. I like it. I'm fine with it. But now it's becoming a little bit clearer that that's the way it looks like they're going to try to take this thing.
You know, if it pans out that way, I agree with you. I think it's really smart. I like the way they're taking advantage of almost really the communique. So you have Reuben and then you'll have Fred, and they're both going to be pretty informed. Foster knows the defense really well. We know that he's kind of a film rat. Warner was a centerpiece at BYU. Like you said, he's a really heady linebacker, and he's going to wear the green dot. So, you know, both of their linebackers are going to have – there's going to be a lot of processing and communication from those two. So it seems like they're taking advantage of that kind of situation right there, which could, you know, benefit the defense. It'll just be like a smarter, more effective defense.
And here's the other question that brings up for me is that I thought it was going to be Foster in the middle all along, and then Warner would be battling with Malcolm Smith, and Malcolm Smith would probably win that starting job early, and then Warner would have to take it from him. But if Warner is going to be in the middle, Reuben Foster is definitely going to be the number one weak side linebacker, unless he's suspended for a couple games. So then that means, does Warner have like an inside track or at least a shot at becoming the starter? Because I wouldn't have thought with Brock Coyle and Malcolm Smith and Reuben Foster, if they're all around in week one, I would have thought originally Warner wouldn't have been able to be the starter. But if Foster's on the weak side and Smith is also on the weak side, then it becomes Warner versus Coyle. And if I'm not mistaken, Coyle's still not practicing, right?
Right, right.
So then maybe that makes it a little bit easier for Warner to get on the field early if he's able to get the mental stuff and have the play calls down.
Yeah, which it seems like he's picked up, you know, relatively quickly. I mean, everything that you've heard has been pretty positive. I think because he was their first defensive draft pick, they took him number 70 overall, so he's a top 75 draft pick. I kind of figured him to be a starter. I thought like there would be at least a little bit more of a show in training camp, you know, Warner versus Smith. Maybe there would be some stories around it, but it might be because of this situation with Foster being at Will, with Warner working at Mike, that they really just kind of avoid that whole storyline altogether, and it just winds up where those two wind up being the starters as they should be and probably would have been all along.
So if that's how it happens and Warner ends up starting in the middle, Reuben Foster, weak side linebacker, and Foster is not suspended, does that make it difficult for one of these other guys to make the roster? Malcolm Smith's being paid a lot. He's being paid starters money. Does he get cut because of that? No, you got Toomer still.
I think it's like the Jimmy Ford situation. I think they're paying top dollar for depth because they're in transition right now. Jimmy Ward's the first DB off the bench he looks big this offseason, so I think he could play box safety behind Tart.
Yeah, he can.
We know he could play free behind Colbert, and he's played slot and outside corner, so he could play all over the place. I would trust Malcolm in a pinch to play Mike linebacker, even though we've only talked about him as a Will. So,
and I believe he has been.
He's just high priced depth, and they have so much money that they weren't able to spend. This is a luxury, and it's a strategy even.
And if I'm not mistaken, Smith has been playing inside with Coyle out. So him and Warner, I believe, were taking those reps at inside linebacker with Toomer and Foster on the weak side, if I'm not mistaken, from minicamp this week.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So he could both play both those spots. And again, if they're interchangeable, so I guess all these linebackers could play all those spots. But are you going to keep five linebackers if that's the case? Because you've got Toomer and Coyle. Elijah Lee, is Elijah Lee even still around, or did they cut him?
I think he's still around.
I got lost in that one.
I believe so. But, yeah, you know, I think it's going to come down to where they want to keep somebody. And then, obviously, unfortunately, the inevitable training camp injuries happen. So we have to see what happens, where they're going to need to keep extra players, et cetera. But, you know, it could really just kind of pan out where they want to be heavy at linebacker or they want to be really deep at receiver. I mean, it really just depends on who wins a job and maybe where they feel they're weaker and they could use an extra body.
And then looking at depth, talked on yesterday's episode, there was a mailbag question about Ward and Armstead and their injuries. If you move on from them, and I think it's a similar situation where maybe if everybody's healthy and you're at the end of camp, then you can have one of those, you know, trades at the very end of camp. Instead of cutting somebody, you trade them to somewhere. Or you know how they cut them early before the first wave of cuts, even though they're a veteran, so they can catch on somewhere else. I could see that with Ward if they think they don't want to go on with them. But I just feel like they're too valuable for the 49ers if they are healthy, both Ward and Armstead, that what you would get in return isn't much. So you would have to be doing somebody a favor and hurting your depth by moving those guys on, because you're not going to get a ton back for either one of those. So trading them doesn't make sense. Let's just, you know, for the first time in a while, the 49ers have a little depth. So roll with that depth, right?
That's what it looks like. Unless they were getting a player back, yeah, I don't think they're going to get a high enough pick where it's worth it.
Yeah, a player back at another position, they maybe need more and they don't have numbers there.
Right. You know, if they were trying to do a package for somebody that was available, you know, Shane Ray had come up this offseason because of the Broncos' depth at linebacker and edge rusher. So if they were to swap Ward and package a pick or something like that, then it would make sense to move the player. But an outright release at this point probably doesn't make a ton of sense. And I don't think it would be worth it if you're getting just like a sixth or seventh round pick back.
I want to see Armstead healthy and actually get on the field. And I think the big end spot that he's going to be playing this year, I think that's the right place for him. So I'm interested to see how that works and then how that whole defensive line comes together, because they've got size. And then the question is, can they get after the quarterback? But Armstead's one of those pieces where he seems like a great fit at that strong side defensive end spot. Now let's see him get healthy, and he's back at his normal weight where he should have been. I don't know what they were thinking last year, putting a 6'7", 290-pound guy, and be like, oh, let's make him into a Leo. And it's like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah, you know, and that's been the tough part with him. That was the tough part that we saw with Tank Carradine, is these guys are switching positions and systems, and they're changing weight, and they're overcoming injuries. And it's so hard to be successful in the NFL as is when you have all these obstacles. And then, you know, obviously Armstead was in, you know, the midst of the regime changeover and everything that had happened and how toxic it was. It's hard for these guys to really get their career off the ground. So I am interested to see Armstead, this year. This is his second year in the same defensive system. Hopefully he can be healthy. They're asking a lot of him, things that he hasn't done before. I think he's only started 8 games at most since he's been in the NFL. I think he had 8 starts 1 year, 6 starts another year. But just, you know, hasn't finished a season. So they would need him to finish a season. They need him to start at a new position, and they need him to be good. So he's very important for them this year.
And it's a great point about, it's got to be frustrating for both Ward and Eric Armstead. So multiple coaching staffs. This is the first year for both of them to have the same staff 2 years in a row, right? Or did Ward have 2 years of, no, I don't think Ward had 2 years of Harbaugh, did he?
No, I think he was 2014, that was Harbaugh's last
year. Right, yeah. So both of those guys, first time ever having but they're both changing positions again. And yeah. Armstead changing his body back. So it's got to be frustrating. And then the injuries on top of all of that, that they can't really – I think 49ers fans haven't seen the best of either one of those players. And if they can stay healthy, the scheme's good for them right now, that's exciting for me to watch. And you know, getting a seventh-round pick I don't think is worth, you know, changing that factor.
Totally. And, you know, another player that's been kind of caught in the wash that we haven't talked about is Ronald Blair. Like, I think a lot of him when he was coming out of App State. He was a really good player.
Absolutely.
But he's another guy, like, had a bad pre-draft process and just kind of, he came into their 3-4 system. Then they switched to a 4-3. He's, you know, being asked to do different things. So I think he's another one to look out for as far as finally getting comfortable and settling in.
Yeah, and he kind of doesn't have – he has a body type where he doesn't really fit a perfect prototype that you're looking for, which is why he falls in the draft. But he's a nonstop guy. He might be one of their top, three or four pass rushers right now, I think. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. If he got enough snaps, he could be one of their team leaders in sacks.
Yeah.
And then he could get cut, too. So, like, I have no idea what to think about him. He could be a lot of different things this year. And they do have a lot of – bigger-bodied defensive linemen, which is kind of the weird thing we've been going back to since the draft, talking about, like, oh, man, they didn't go for those, you know, speed rushers. They added more size along the defensive line, which they already have a lot of. But I love Ronald Blair, and I hope he gets a shot to show what he can do, because I think he can get after the quarterback a little bit, and I think the 49ers are going to need that.
Definitely. He was showing up, getting hits on the quarterback. He didn't play a ton. I think he played the back half of the season.
Yeah.
Because he was, like, injured early. But when he came in, he was, you know, just like, you know, Sheldon Day, Ledger Doosable, some of these other guys that just kind of didn't have big names but came in and played and were productive. And I think a lot of what they're doing on the defensive line with Jeff Zgonina, and, you know, I think they're going to have a better pass rush this year with Chris Kiffin on board. So I think that's going to benefit guys like Armstead and Blair. And I think they have a good eye for D-line talent overall. So, you know, yeah, they didn't get the big name, but, you know, maybe there's a strategy. Maybe there's something brewing right now where they do take a leap next year.
So Ronald Blair was one of the names you mentioned in your article at 4thandnine.com, long shots for 49ers camp this year. And then another one, if you're looking for the speedier edge rusher, is PETA. And still don't really know what we have in PETA Taumoipino. So he's another interesting one.
Yeah, and good pronunciation.
That's Thank you. A tough one.
yeah, PETA's a good one. Sixth-round pick. So, I mean, you're not betting a lot on that. There's been some guys that have really you know, broken through with that draft status, but he could, you know, he could be a contributor as far as depth. I mean, maybe that's, I guess that's the hope for him, is that he looks better than he did last year. And then he kind of just comes on and can help what they have, you know, not going to feature him, but maybe he can actually contribute to, you know, their kind of remodeled front seven.
And I think he's another one of those guys where they wanted him to change his body a little bit. If I'm not mistaken, he's put on 10 or 15 more pounds from his, whatever, like 245 pounds. He was pretty small. I mean, he's a small for an edge rusher, 6'1", 6'1½", 245 or something coming out. So I think he's more up like 255, something like that. So a little more strength, a little more power coming off the edge there with his athleticism. Maybe he can be something. Maybe he's not anything. But it's another name to watch out for in camp. I think that's an easier position to find a place in than the bigger end situation is right now for the 49ers. So that's something that could be working in his favor. Another player who has an interesting set of attributes that the 49ers don't really have is a bigger wide receiver and undrafted free agent Stephen Dunbar, who you mentioned in that article as well.
Yeah. Dunbar's different. He's the 6'3 receiver. He's one of their taller receivers. Shanahan does not have many of them. But I like what he does in terms of, you know, his blocking, the run after catch. I didn't know a lot about Stephen Dunbar at Houston, so I kind of just did, you know, my homework after the draft like we do. One of the people that whose opinions I've followed for a while, Matt Waldman, he actually, yeah, he had some really good notes on Dunbar. He had like a little moments thread of Stephen Dunbar and was kind of just pointing out some. You know, I hate to, you know, be cliche, but, you know, blue collar attributes of his, you know, just good blocking, you know, doing a lot of the little things well. And I think that, you know, that kind of amounts to something with Shanahan. I think he cares about that stuff when a player is consistent and physical and does, a lot off the ball. So big blocking receiver, potential red zone threat. He would have to be that guy that gives Richie James a run for his money at the last receiver spot, or makes them carry like a seventh receiver or something like that.
Right, or some injuries. And I do want to talk a little bit more about wide receivers. The one thing Mike LaFleur, who's the 49ers wide receiver coach, mentioned that they loved about Stephen Dunbar and why they brought him in as an undrafted free agent was that range and that size. And it's something they didn't really have. And so he can go – he's not the most athletic guy. That's the first thing that jumped out to me when I saw him. I was like, okay, well, he's not fast, but he's big. Like you said, blue collar type player, he will go up and get the ball. He's a rangy athlete. So if he can overcome his lack of speed, and the 49ers have a ton of speed, so interesting one to follow. It's going to be tough for him to break through, like you mentioned, but maybe there's some injuries. Maybe he shows he's available for the practice squad and then can work his way in that way. But he's just a player to remember. But looking at the wide receiving core, so it's, I'm trying to look at this not so much. I feel like I have a really good idea of what the receiving core is going to look like in 2018 and how they're going to be deployed as long as everyone's healthy. You've got Pierre Garçon as the split end, you know, the X wide receiver. You've got Marquise Goodwin doing what he did last year, the Z wide receiver. You've got Trent Taylor in the slot. They're already working Dante Pettis in at all three of those positions. A little bit more, I think, with Marquise out this week from practice one day. Dante Pettis supposedly had a really good day of practice on Tuesday and was working at that Z position in place of Marquise Goodwin. So I think ideally you would want to have Dante Pettis off the line of scrimmage just to help him get off the jam. He's not the biggest, most physical receiver, but he's super quick. So that way he can, you know, ditch those press coverage corners a little bit easier if he's either in the slot or off the line of scrimmage a little bit. And then long term is where I have some questions. And I don't know if you agree with my assessment of how, what it's going to look like this year. Kendrick Bourne, I always forget to mention Kendrick Bourne, and he's gotten so much press for a guy who was undrafted last year. And basically, if you're Stephen Dunbar, you want to look at Kendrick Bourne and be like, okay, I want to do what this guy's done. So he's stuck, and now he's someone that people are talking about. He's going to be one of the top four or five wide receivers on this 49ers team. He'll probably work at the X, I'm guessing, just because of the people that they have in place. Richie James also there. But looking ahead is where I have questions, because Pierre Garçon is not young and he's getting more and more expensive. So do they try to move past him after the 2018 season? That's my big question.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's funny. I don't know how much, I mean, Garçon is great, but then what you're asking is basically from a value perspective, and right, and you're mentioning the depth of this team. So to this team, they don't need him as badly as they did last year when they really had nothing. And, you know, they really needed him as the standout while they were figuring out who the quarterback was going to be too. Like, you know, this was, they made a priority to sign him because they knew Garçon was going to help whatever quarterback they had, you know, Beathard or, you know, that's what they went in the season with, was Hoyer and Beathard. So
they didn't have a legitimate starting wide receiver, period. They needed to add one of those guys. So they had to find somebody, and he was familiar with Kyle Shanahan. So a great signing, but I don't think it was something they were looking at 4 years down the road and were like, okay, he's still going to be our number one in 4 years.
Right. And they fixed up the wide receiver position so fast. I mean, which is just crazy, because you and I have been sitting here, you know, looking at this team be built and just watch them miss on receiver after receiver after receiver. And Shanahan has fixed it in a year. And it's got you can look at this roster now and all the receivers that you mentioned. And I definitely agree with you how 2018 is going to look. But you could see the receiving core this year. I mean, they could function without several of these guys just because there would be somebody else to pop up in his place and pick up the slack. I think the future, you're looking at Dante Pettis where Garçon is. Trent Taylor is, I think, your future, you know, or is your slot and slot of the future. And, you know, Richie James, I mean, it's early, but, you know, if he pans out the way, you know, we think he can, you know, he had a third round grade from a lot of people. We read about that after the draft, that he was kind of in that range. And then Kendrick Bourne, like you mentioned. So they have four wide receivers that they can really just deploy. I mean, I would be comfortable going into a season with those guys right away. And I didn't even mention Marquise Goodwin. Just the guys that they have, you know, that they had brought in, you know, via the draft and obviously the undrafted pool. So they have, it looks like, a receiving core of the future. And Goodwin, who also just got his extension, is only, you know, till 2020. So, I mean, I think by 2019, they could be moved on from both Garçon and Goodwin.
And by 2020, you're not even counting any other draft picks that they bring in, they're continuing to develop, or even bring in some other free agents as well. So, I think you're spot on with that. And by the way, I'm talking to Dylan DeSimone. He is the editor, writer at 4thandnine.com. Also hosts the new Cover 4 podcast with another friend of the podcast, Ian Eric Crocker, who I've had on the show and I always love talking to and love picking his brain about the defensive backs. So moving on here, I feel like when it comes to the wide receivers, the view of, like, say, national media or fans that don't follow the 49ers closely, and if you are in Pittsburgh and you look over at the 49ers, you think, oh, man, that's a trash wide receiving core. And you kind of look at their defensive backfield and you think, oh, man, who are these guys? I don't know any of these guys. They're not familiar to me. But I think in reality, or at least as far as in the building in Santa Clara, as far as Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh and everybody is concerned in the 49ers organization, I think their wide receiving core and I think their defensive backfield is a lot better than nationally they are thought of.
Oh, my God, yeah. I totally agree with you. It is – both of those, with how fast they put them together, considering where they were at you know, just recently. Like, the turnover really is amazing. Like, sometimes those are multi-year projects. Sometimes the new regime doesn't figure it out. You know, there's been a receiver drought for years. And, you know, I think you can talk to 10 49ers fans and five of them might not have the best opinion of Michael Crabtree. As far as, I mean, he was the best receiver since Terrell Owens. And, you know, I think, you know, you can beat what he did career-wise and career receiving for the Niners. I mean, it could, you know, Bourne or Pettis, Taylor, you know, any of those guys could kind of surpass what he did. So it just speaks to their eye for those positions. I mean, at wide receiver, and yeah, like you said, the defensive backfield.
And I always wonder, it's like a chicken or the egg thing, we'll kind of never know, but I wonder if they were really bad at development too. I think that was part of it. And how good of a coach Kyle Shanahan is, I wonder if it, not that it doesn't matter, but I think they're pretty good at seeing who they like and how they can utilize them and then utilizing them properly on offense. I'm talking about Kyle Shanahan here. I almost get the feeling that even with the guys that the 49ers drafted previously, if Shanahan was their coach, those guys would have been better too, because he's just a good offensive coach, right? And a great offensive mind. So both that they didn't have a lot of depth last year and they were able to play, or even in some cases forced to play, young players. And the fact that Kyle Shanahan knows how to develop these guys, I think all those things come together, and they're good at scouting and understanding what they're looking for in these wide receivers. All those things come together, and it really helps them, as so far helped them build a young up and coming wide receiving core, like you said, really quickly.
Definitely. And a lot of it, I think, is compatibility with, you know, the traits that their scouts identify with the system. You know, you could put Trent Taylor on another team, and I don't know if he'd be the same. I mean, he probably wouldn't be the same player, because Kyle Shanahan has a specific exactly. plan for him. Kendrick Bourne, sometimes there's just weird reasons for why players go undrafted, but, you know, he's got a lot of standout traits. He, you know, people liked his teammate, Cooper Kupp. So I don't understand why, you know, Bourne was, you know, undrafted. I mean, looking at him now, he's one of their best receivers off the line of scrimmage. I think that's super important to what Shanahan, you know, when he looks at receivers, all of his guys are really good off the line of scrimmage. All of them are really good at running the short to intermediate routes, slants, outs. So I think, yeah, a lot of it is just kind of looking for certain things, and then when it's plugged into the system, it just it clicks. It just looks different. That's kind of what I would attribute a lot of it to.
Well, first of all, going back to what you mentioned about Kendrick Bourne going undrafted, when you're the number two wide receiver at Eastern Washington University, or whatever it was, it's like, yeah, it's hard to get a lot of recognition. So I think that's part of it. And I, even for me, when they brought him in, I was like, okay, well, this guy's camp fodder. There's no way he's going to make it. And then you kind of watch him play a little bit, and you're like, okay, this guy has quicks, and he can separate, despite being a you know 6'1" wide receiver. And that's exactly what Kyle Shanahan saw in him. So, yeah, that ability to see what they're looking for in a wide receiver and then utilize that talent has been pretty fun to watch. And so I'm kind of not worried at all about the offense. The offense is just in such good hands. The big question was finding the quarterback, and they solved that one. So I'm like, okay, let's spend resources on defense, kill teams on defense. I'm okay with what happens on offense, just, you know, organically.
Yeah. And they're still, I think they still need to build the defense out. And they're still waiting on, they're going to be waiting on investments. They made two long-term investments basically with Tavarius Moore and Kentavious Street this year. So
right.
We don't even get to see those guys. I mean, really, those guys this year, even if Moore gets some snaps, I mean, I'm expecting him to, you know, get baptized out there. It's not going to look good. I mean, he might flash, you might see the speed and the makeup speed and length show up, but I would also expect some of those. I mean, we all remember Jimmy Ward versus Brandon Marshall.
Right.
I think we might see, you know, something like that, just because it's a position he's not played. But so, yeah, you know, the defensive side of the ball, they have some other players marinating too, which is kind of exciting. And, you know, I think they just need to keep turning that side of the ball over and see what they get from their undrafted corners. Tavarius McFadden was a big name. I'm kind of curious to see if he sticks around this year. We had talked about him actually pretty shortly after the draft. I was curious just because, you know, he's a long corner and Richard Sherman's been doing all that coaching with him, that, you know, he could actually benefit from the 49ers environment, and he could be a contributor on this defense. So Marcel Harris was another one. So they have like another layer of talent that they just added. But yeah, they definitely need to keep piling on the resources on the defensive side of the ball.
I got one more question for you before we get out of here, Dylan. I want to ask you this. Who do you think is that one player that takes the big leap in 2018? I don't know if you were a Madden. Did you play a lot of Madden?
I did, yeah.
Or maybe you still do. I'm not sure. I haven't played Madden in a while. But I always remember doing – I wasn't like an online player. I always loved playing like the, you know, the franchise, the offline franchise. So let me put it to you this way. Like in Madden, when you would say sim the season – progression model would happen at the end of the year and one player would just jump up with their huge overall grade, right? If you were to sim this 2018 season for the 49ers, who's that big jump, that player that would have this huge progression after the end of the season?
All right, I'll give you one for offense and defense.
You can do whatever you want.
Okay. Yeah, for the offensive side of the ball, I want to say George Kittle. And that is because, like we learned today, he was hurt most of 2017, which was kind of interesting because he still looked really spectacular. He got better as he got more reps and time. I think he's a great player. He's got a really bright future. So I would have to say George Kittle.
Can I guess who the guy on the defensive side of the ball is going to be?
Yeah.
But by the way, Kittle's a great choice there, and I'm really excited because I love that Kittle's a two-way player. He's a tough guy, again, a blue-collar type of guy. He will block you. He can be an inline tight end. He's really athletic. I don't know if he's a guy that's going to get all the press clippings or be the number one tight end for your fantasy team, but he's just a really good player. I'm excited to see him and bulked up a little bit. He was looking kind of ripped the other day. I'm going to guess that the guy you're going to say on the defensive side of the ball is Witherspoon.
Ooh.
Is that where you're going?
No, I wasn't the player on my mind, but yeah, you know, I thought he was so good. I thought he was really good at the end of last year. So, I mean, from week 17 to this year, I would expect he's going to be a lot better. The guy I was actually thinking was Solomon Thomas.
Oh, yeah, okay.
They need him to be better. I just think he's really smart, and I think he's just really talented, and I think he's a hard worker. I think that somebody like that learns and develops. So I would be counting on Solomon to kind of have a big second year. They're going to keep playing him at Leo, though. I mean, that's what the depth chart shows, and I think that's what their plan is. He's got to come through. He's got to kind of finish learning some of the pass rush moves that, you know, he started to develop last season. But I think they're counting on him. They need him there. And I think with, you know, again, Chris Kiffin kind of coming in and some of their new pass rush packages, that I think Solomon Thomas can be a benefactor. I think he's a super talented player. And I'm very curious to kind of see how this season pans out for him.
You know, with the Solomon Thomas thing and him playing Leo, I think that's still a base down thing. And I think we need to do a better job of, and just like, you know, whatever, NFL.com, their depth charts, and the 49ers.com depth charts. Sub is the new base. So whatever nickel is what I'm thinking a guy's starting position is. So for Solomon Thomas, I think he's still going to be rushing inside. So basically on running downs or early downs, and he's going to have to rush the pass. There's going to be, you know, people throwing on first down in base packages. But he's going to be the outside guy there. But I think he's still going to do a lot of his damage from the inside, which is the way it should be for him. And it's similar to what's going on with Eric Armstead on the other side. So my question will be, when it's third down, if Solomon Thomas kicks in, is he going to be playing in front of Armstead? Are they going to keep Armstead on the field? Does Thomas actually stay outside and they move Armstead in? Do they take him off the field, move in Sheldon Day? Do they move in? You know, so that's what I'm interested in, to see on third downs how they actually have this defensive line, or if they're just going to do a massive amount of subbing to try to keep everybody fresh and keep everyone coming at the quarterback.
I think that's a big part of Saleh's philosophy, and that was the big thing he wanted to change. I think with DeForest Buckner in particular, he had mentioned how much he had, like 99 or 98% of this defensive snaps or something. In 2016. So that was the first thing that he changed. So Buckner only played 70% or so of the snaps this year. I think it was like 73%. So I think they're going to want to have fresh legs. I think Thomas and Buckner inside, I think those are the two best inside players.
That's what I want to see. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think who doesn't want to see that? Those guys are, are they're monsters, and that's why they were drafted, is because of how good they are inside there. So I think, you know, you go with those two, and then you know here's Cassius Marsh's chance to earn his money. And you know, there's what, 4+ million in incentives and performance incentives if he plays well. So I think, you know, if you wanted a secondary breakout player, maybe it's Cassius Marsh.
Yeah, have that opportunity. He's only had, I think, as high as 3 sacks in a season. He hasn't had the chance to be the number one guy. So it's going to be Marsh. It's going to be a Tauschew. And those guys have an opportunity to prove that the 49ers didn't need to add any extra outside pass rush help. Well, I got to get out of here. We're running out of time. Dylan, always a pleasure to chat with you. Dylan DeSimone, you can find his work at 4thandnine.com, the brand new Cover 4 podcast. And you can find Dylan on Twitter at Dylan A. DeSimone. Dylan, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to Dylan once again for joining me here on the show. Be back next week talking more 49ers with y'all right here on Locked On 49ers.